I just pressed record. My name is Renna. I'm working at the Jackson Center and have been for just a few months. This is my very first time getting to interview anyone. So I'm really excited, and I'm really excited that I'm getting to interview Miss Anissa McClendon, who has left lots of marks on this community, particularly with youth education. She's the daughter of Miss Mae McClendon, who I know, the niece, right, of Miss Helen,
mm-hmm.
who is my neighbor.
Yes.
So we're connected in ways, and we've gotten to chat just a little bit, but this is our very first time meeting, so on the record now, I'll let you introduce yourself just a little bit, tell me what you're about, and we can get started. We can talk with some questions.
Hi, my name's Anissa McClendon, and I am a Chapel Hill native. I tell people that most of my life, or half of my life, I've lived in Chapel Hill, and then my adult life, I moved and bought a house in Carrboro. So as I was growing up, my first 20 years of life, I lived in Pine Oaks. And then when I was 20, my granny, Martha McClendon, passed, and we moved to Northside. And my mom lived there for another 20 years there, and I lived another 6 years there in Northside. And then once I decided I was going to get into the real world, moved to Carrboro. And so been living there ever since. I always tell people, even though we have two different names, which is Chapel Hill and Carrboro, to me, they're the same towns. You can have one foot in, you know, railroad track on one side, and the other side, you're at the other town. But throughout my years, I've done a lot of projects, but most of my career has been serving the community, which has been doing a lot in education, from working at the Chapel Hill and Carrboro Parks and Rec, where I did all of the camps. Then I also went and started working for the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools, worked for them for 22 and a half years, worked from kindergarten through eighth grade. And now I do a art and STEM camp. We've done it for 7 years, and that's for roughly rising sixth graders to 12th graders. So a lot of work with education for the youth of this community.
Very cool. So I can tell that's what you're really passionate about, and I can tell that you're specifically passionate about this community across Chapel Hill and Carrboro as kind of one scape, even though it being two towns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would you want to jump right into just kind of like your experience growing up as a child in Pine Knolls, and then also like growing up in Northside as well, growing older there? And just kind of your experience with education and empowerment and representation, just how that's felt for you, and then maybe later we can get into just how that moves you today.
Well, I tell people, living there in Pine Knolls, I didn't start FPG, which Frank Porter Graham, until I was in the first grade. The daycare I was there on Cameron Avenue, my mom kept me there until I was in first grade. So I started first grade at FPG. So first through third, I was there, which was less than a half a mile from our neighborhood. But then that summer, right before fourth grade, we get a letter that says, you can no longer go to Frank Porter Graham. And so the families were trying to get together, like, what does this mean, you know? And so the district, which was Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools, were saying that no bus was going to be provided. So we would have to go to Ephesus because of the low percentage of Black students there. So that was my first encounter of what we call busing. So I always told people for 3 years, from fourth grade to sixth grade, every day we went to school, we left when it was dark. We had to be in the neighborhood at their stop by 6:15 because we had to get all the kids in our neighborhood, go across Chapel Hill, then pick up other students before we even got to Ephesus. And so we did that fourth, fifth, and sixth. And so finally, when we were supposed to go to what at our time was junior high, they were allowed us to go to Gray Coberth, which was still only like 1 mile from our house. So they provided a bus for us to do that. And we were there. I always tell people when I got into the eighth grade, that was really when I started seeing racism. We had a lot of Black teachers in sixth and seventh. And during that time, we had the same co-teachers. So sixth, seventh, you had the same when you rotated. And then when you got into eighth grade, you had different sets of teachers. So it really didn't dawn on to me like 3 months into the eighth grade year. You know, you saw teachers, but then you knew things were going to be a little bit different. And so then we get into the ninth grade, and then you really start seeing, like, what is going on? And I would have, at that time, I had two Black teachers. So when I would be writing assignments for the Black teachers, A's, no problem. And then I would have a language arts teacher, and same writing style, C or C plus. And it would be read all through your papers. And so, you know, I was the only Black student in that language arts class. And I always sat in the front and I would put my hand up and I wouldn't get called on. Like, what's going on? And I played basketball. So I knew that when you went into class, your behavior was in check. Yeah, sometimes I would talk a lot. Boom, boom, my class. Oh, you need to stop talking, you know, because our science teacher was the basketball coach. So you didn't need too many times to be like, you playing today? Got to stop that talking, you know. But then it got to the point like, what am I doing wrong? You're not calling on me. My paperwork, you know, and I'm putting my time in here. I'm working, you know. And so it had to be, my mom had to go and have an appointment. And we thought everything was, you know, taken care of. And then it was just like, the lady got worse. And then we had a report that we had to do. You pick your topic, they check in and say, yes, you can do it. I still have that paper to today. It was 10 pages. And you had to do your citations, you know, everything that you took from something, you had to verify it. And I knew, man, I knew. I had worked on that thing. My granny had seen me working on it. Oh, man, I knew I was going to get an A plus on this thing because I knew I had worked on it. C minus. So my granny was like, hey, told my mom, you got to go back to that school. You got to go back because now she's getting punished. And I've seen her come in here because my desk would be in the living room because I was the youngest of seven grandkids. So my granny, our house was the area where the grandkids would come until the two other sisters would come and get their kids. And so my granny had everybody had structure. She would have your snack ready for you. You had to finish your homework before you went outside and did any plan. So my grandma knew that I was working on this paper. She knew, you know. And so we finally had another appointment, blah, blah, blah. And so they were like, well, we can move her out of the classroom. No, it's not about her move. Teacher needs to be held accountable because now she is really hurting his kid's self-esteem. And then so finally go to the high school, which is Chapel Hill High. And during that time, we were not considered AP classes, you know, as it is now. But I was on that track where I was ahead of my game. So in 10th grade, I was taking chemistry. Teacher comes, and we're probably 3 weeks into the class. Why are you taking this class? I'm the only black again. Why are you taking this class? You don't need any more science credits. I may not need any more science credit, but I'm planning on going to a 4-year college. So I'm going to need to keep taking some science classes. Is it a problem for me being in here?
Right, like what happened to learning? Like...
So it was, and again, I was playing basketball for Chapel Hill High. So I was like, this is real, you know. And so when I got to 12th grade, I only needed 1/4 of a credit to graduate.
Wow.
Okay. So what am I going to do? I have to have language arts. Okay. All my science is done. My foreign language is done. My elective, what am I going to do? So you would thought that the social workers, your school counselors, they're sitting here with something saying, hey, these available. That's, you're supposed to assist students, right? That's why y'all there. So we had to figure it out. So I ended up doing like an intern because I wanted to do athletic training. So I did an internship at Duke, which was wonderful. So did that first semester with my language, as long as I could do language class, then go to Duke. And then I ended up taking 2 math classes that next semester because I needed to do something. I mean, I wasn't working, so I had to do something. But, during that time, it was a shame that people were not, my experience, were not helping the student like they needed to. But also growing up in Pine Nose, we had what we call the Green Center or the Pine Nose Center, which was 8 years of my life was right across the street from me. So we had tutoring there. We had little workshop stuff for the kids on Saturday. We also had a relationship with the Chapel Hill Parks and Rec where we would do activities. You know, they would come and pick us up, take us to Hargraves, and stuff like that. So that was a really good thing that the community kids could go there and have fun. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of volunteers that came in and helped us. You know, I had 2 people, it was a husband and wife, Wiggins, Mr. and Mrs. Wiggins. They lived in Pittsburgh. And they helped me a lot, like 6th grade, 7th grade. I have my first dictionary that they had gave me. I still have it to this day. But it's just, you know, kids are here to learn, and they have to learn by experience. And then they look up to the adults to help them or guide them where they need to go. That's our job, I think. I think.
And yes, and what you would assume to be the job of a school.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I'm here in Northside, and I go to the beautiful school of UNC. So
we'll talk after this.
So UNC was not my first choice. I really wanted to go. I loved UNC Pembroke, UNC Greensboro, and then UNC. My grandmother was becoming ill, and I really didn't want to go far from home. And so just ended up here and going here. I was able to go to a summer program at UNC for 8 weeks where they paid us to go. We were able to take a language arts class, a reading class, and a math class, which was wonderful. So that kick-started us there before the fall semester started. But the only thing that it didn't prepare you for was two things. Racism there at UNC and the large classes. Because our classes were only like 20 kids, 30 kids. And then when you went into your first class of 300 people, 400 people, I tell people that's when I learned my social security number. I didn't know it. I mean, I would have to go in my book and see what it was. Because when they did your scores for your test, it was the last four digits. They would post them out there. And I'd be like, how do we know? There's like the four digits of your social security. I'm like, what? I don't know that mess. But that's how they put your stuff up. That's how you found out what your score was. But it just did not get you prepared for those big classes. Even when you go to your professor and say, you think in this office hours, and they go in and you say, oh, I have a question about something that you said, a couple of things, you know. Oh, you need to go talk to a classmate. You got office hours. Now this is how relevant this is. It was a young girl who's a Chapel Hillian in my graduating class with me. Her father was a professor at UNC, taking a psych class, and he had said something. And those classes was like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I had went, knocked on the door, boom, 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 come on in. So I'm asking questions. So it wasn't like he had never seen me before, because this kid is a Chapel Hillian. We done went elementary, junior high school, walked across that stage over there at Carmichael, okay? And now I'm at UNC. And you tell me, no, you need to go ask a classmate. No, excuse me. I'll pay your salary. That grant and scholarship that I got, paying your salary. No, you need to assist your student. That's why you got office hours.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, stuff like that. Crazy.
Yeah, just imagining like you doing it. Being in high school where in your chemistry class you're having to like defend your very presence in the class. Mm-hmm. Like your teacher telling you, why are you in this class? Because I go here.
Mm-hmm.
And then in language arts as well, like raising your hand and like not even being called on, or like not even like you actively pursuing like the attention or opportunity that should lead you towards maybe getting A's on your papers. Mm-hmm. Or like building a teacher-student relationship. Like I can't imagine entering college and being in those like lecture style 400 person classrooms after like having to defend your very presence in like a 20, 30 kid classroom in high school. Was that professor whose kid was a classmate of yours growing up, was he like, did he acknowledge that you knew you? Did he acknowledge that?
Okay, he knew me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was just like, go ask someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like, oof, I'm like teetering between like kind of like the pessimism of like, wow, what is school even for?
Mm-hmm.
If your teacher is saying like, go figure this out on your own, or but then I'm also like noticing and really wanting to acknowledge the fact that it's community efforts that taught you, and it's community efforts of going to, can you remind me of the name of the center in Pine Knolls?
Pine Knolls Center.
Pine Knolls Center.
Mm-hmm.
The center in Pine Knolls is called Pine Knolls Center.
Mm-hmm.
Like you going there to do your learning and do your studying with other kids, and like when the very school is meant to
mm-hmm.
foster your learning isn't doing that, it's happening at home when grandmother is saying, sit down and do your homework before you go play. And
mm-hmm.
then it's happening when you get together with your community to do that learning. So And then even the professor saying, like, go talk to someone else. It was almost like he got there. Like, it's almost like he acknowledged this, like, sense of community learning. It would just be nice if it wasn't, like made to be a necessity in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It does feel like it segues pretty well into what you're doing now. You said that you've done, like, a lot of kids' camps historically.
Mm-hmm.
But presently, or in the past years, you've been working with this E3 camp,
mm-hmm.
Fostering STEM learning among, you said, 6th grade to
12th grade.
Would you like to talk a little bit about, like, that community learning that you're being such a leader for? And
E3, which is called Empowering Excellence, okay, through Exploration. And the first year, it was on paper. I was working at Smith Middle School, and it was my 7th year there. And I had went to the principal and I said, hey, why is it that majority of our EC kids are Hispanic and Black? We had a lot of kids who maybe were 2 levels in reading, and they were labeled. Only thing they needed was someone to really pull them out for 3 or 4 months and work with them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that they were slow, that they didn't understand what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
They just needed someone to help them with pronouncing words, or just bringing up their vocabulary, you know. And then others were just like, they just didn't have the setting at home where nobody could really make sure they were doing their homework assignments. And then you would see it was consistent. It wasn't just math class they were not doing. It was across the board. They were not doing their assignments. They may be watching 3 other siblings.
Yeah.
You know, they honestly doing some things at home, and they just couldn't have that opportunity to do homework.
Yeah.
And it was like, why we can't put some things in place to help these kids? Because giving them zeros and zeros makes them have Fs
mm-hmm.
on their report cards. Can we try to figure out a way to help them?
Right.
So to start a dialogue with the principal, and the lady that I was working with, I was telling her, I said, you know, hey, I would love to do something in the summer. Said, these kids in middle school don't have anything. We got to give them a safe environment. Because if you look back, there's a lot of things, reading recovery for elementary, okay? Then you get kids who go to the high school, you go into summer school because you flunked a class, okay? But there's nothing really for these kids in middle school who really just need somewhere to go for 4 or 5 hours a day. Safe environment, okay? So we're talking back and forth. So I was like, hey, throwing out some ideas. And so couldn't get anything done that summer because they kept saying, hey, you got to put this in place. You got to put that in place, whatever. And so finally, got my proposal, started really making connections in the community. And, I went straight to the segment of African American kids. And the reason why I did that is because if you look at Chapel Hill Carver City Schools, the latter is the Black kids are at the bottom. Okay. So I said, hey, started doing my research, started looking at all these STEM companies in North Carolina. These people saying, we got 50,000 jobs. We need people. You do. Where are we getting them from? Why we ain't telling people?
Right.
And then I'm starting to learn about these CTE programs with the district and, you know, auto mechanic, biomechanical, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, who y'all gearing this to?
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting to all the segments, or is it only a certain segment y'all trying to get to? Okay, I get it now. And so I'm like doing my research. I'm working with, you know, like Pfizer, Wolf Speed, all these companies, and they're saying we need some black and brown people. Okay. Well, I'm going to start trying to train some kids up so they can get out here and get a certificate in 16 or 17 months from Durham Tech, Wake Tech, wherever, and go out here and make $60,000, $70,000 to $100,000. Not trying to throw out 4-year college. That ain't what I'm trying to do. But not everybody's geared to 4 years. Okay. If I can get me a certificate and get me one of those $50,000 jobs, then I don't have debt. They paying people to go to tech schools. They paying people. Why we ain't telling people that?
Right.
We're not telling. So that's when I started doing connection in the community, listening, taking notes everywhere I go. People say, hey, you want to have lunch? Yes. Mm-hmm. I'll sit and talk to you for 3 hours, whatever. Getting information and then trying to take it back to the community. So E3 Camp, over the 7 years, we have had 132 kids to come through. We have what we call repeaters. So I've had 2 kids that have gone through for 6 years. The biggest success is, well, three big success. We've had one that got a free ride at Johns Hopkins, got one that's got a free ride at UNC, and then I have a young fella who, you know, decided 2-year, 4-year was not for me. So now he's going to make a career out of going. He's in the Army now. He's been there a year. Loves it. You know, so giving them that safe environment for the summer for 3 weeks, taking them on educational field trips, giving them those hands-on activities, experiment with that, and bringing in on-site presenters. Because I would tell the kids, I said, listen, these people are expert in their field. They experts. They know what they're talking about, and they're getting paid in this field every day. So y'all need to pay attention because they're telling you. Last year was wonderful. We brought in Pfizer from the Sanford plant. And that day they had 8 people. One of the people was one of my former students at Smith. And that particular day, it made myself and another lady who volunteers, her name is Paulette Scott, she and I, we worked at Smith. And so she comes every year and volunteers. And so the kid says, you all need to listen to Miss McClendon and Miss Scott because they were my teachers when I was in middle school. So the kids were like, are you playing? He was like, no, I am serious. And we didn't even know that he was with Pfizer. And so the biggest thing for him was, he was just telling them, said, listen, I didn't have this opportunity. Take advantage of this opportunity. And so he was given a year internship to work for Pfizer. And so we were just like, we were blown away. That made our week. That really made our week. But success story like that, just giving a kid the opportunity to come to camp. And if they can just open their minds up and learn this information. We do also African American Moments. We teach them about history here, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County. About African Americans who have invented things. Because a lot of kids are not learning it in the classroom, sadly. But we talk about that. We also give them books because I believe in reading. Have to read because that's the power in that. So just giving them that opportunity, taking them places. We take them to Stagville in Durham. Plantation, one of the biggest plantations in North Carolina. But we also do a fun trip. We'll either go to the Life and Science in Durham or we'll go to Greensboro Science Center, you know. So we do the fun things, but we also do the ones that make you think a little bit. And we set the classroom up just like a science class. So we have a central questions when they come in. Say, go ahead and do the essential questions. Everybody has a warm-up book. This, because I tell them, this is academic, and it's also enrichment. You know, you just not come in here to play and do whatever on your phone for 6 hours. Yeah. That's not what it's about. It's about, I will give you a little downtime at lunch where you have 30 minutes to relax, talk to your friends, play cards, whatever you want to do. But it's about business when you come here. And we always tell the parents, look at your kid, it's the composition book, look in it, because there's information, African-American information, hands-on activities that we did. They get an instruction book. They take notes from what the on-site presenter talks about. And some of our on-site presenters also do, you know, have handouts. So they have all these things that they have accessible in their composition book. So that's why we have a lot of people who repeat, want to come back. Because we change up every year about things that we do. And then at the end, the very last day, we do what we call the last day performance. And every kid, some of them would do two performances, but they stand up and they talk about every topic that we did. So it's less talking from me. It's more about the kids. The kids will talk about 90% of the time. And they'll talk about every topic. It could be from forensic science, what Pfizer did, making solar cars, making airplanes, making a Native American math game, just all these different things. And they get up and they talk about it. And then we have posters throughout. This year we were at United Church, and there have things that they did. Like this year we did a book. We got it's called a Poem Hood book. It was 30 black authors in there. So there were 30 different poems, and the kids had to choose two poems that resonated with them. And then they had to do posters about one. And then we had a black speech pathologist came in and talked about goals. And so all the kids had to make what was a wisdom board. And one kid presented their wisdom board about things that they hope to do in the future. You know, and then at the end of the program, we provide a lunch for everybody who's there. And then we give kids, each kid will get a Jane Sport lifetime book bag, and then a string bag and another bag worth $800 worth of school supplies. So, I always tell people don't understand. They get T-shirts. Everything in this camp is free.
Totally funded.
Wow. And so probably everything that we do, from food to the school supplies to the field trips, the hands-on activities, the T-shirts, the books, roughly probably $2,500 each kid is tunneled through them. So we go out in the community. I tell people, I have a sponsor letter. I do grants, because the only thing people can say, two things, yes or no. And it's okay if you want to say no. I don't have a problem. Then I'll say, can you volunteer? Because the program goes on volunteers, you know. But again, it's about the kids. What are you trying to do for the kids? And so we have to give them that opportunity. Because if you don't give them an opportunity, they have no earthly ideas out there for them. So that's what we do.
That's so wonderful, and so much of that sticks out to me. I want to talk about the kids, but I thought it was so beautiful when you talked about parents looking in the composition notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's such a bridge, and that's probably so healing as a parent to see what your child is getting to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's something that you didn't get to learn in school. Seeing it through your child's writing, like
mm-hmm.
through the lens of your child, and how
mm-hmm.
your child like received and what they gleaned from the information, and then just like it is for the children, and it extends beyond the children as well, and allows for parents to do some learning and then some like connecting with
mm-hmm.
the kid as well. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we did 2 years ago. We had a parent. One of our books that we gave was Black History. And so the son had placed it on a table in the house. So the mom thought it was Chapel Hill Public Library book. So he said, "Hey, we need to make sure we take that book back to the public library." So the son says, "What book are you talking about? You know, mom, blah, blah, blah." And so she's talking about that Black History book. It's a nice book. But we got to make sure we get it back. So he's like, "No, mom, I got that book from camp." She was like, "What?" So she said, she told him, said, "I was looking through the book. And I was like, I don't even know half this information myself." So she made it a point the next day when she dropped her son off. She was like, "Thank you so much for that book. We're going to be sitting down looking at that," because she's like, "Half of that information I've never heard of." And I said, "That's what I do." I said, because when we do books, we try to do novels, we try to do history, and then we try to do a science, you know. So we try to mix it up with the books. So we always try to do something history-wise. One year they got a book. It was called 40 Heroes. But just giving them again, opportunity to learn their history. Just learn they know about Chapel Hill Nine. And so the first 3 years we bought in some of the members of Chapel Hill Nine. And that one was really breathtaking because one of the kids that was in my camp saw his grandfather at the door at the school and said, "Miss McClendon, that's my grandfather." And I said, "Yeah, he's here to do a presentation. Let him on in." And he was like, "He's here to do a presentation? What are you talking about?" So he goes through the classroom into the door, lets his grandfather in, gives him a hug. And so we collect everybody. A couple other guys are coming down the hall. And so we're getting everybody ready for this presentation. I think we had five people that were up there. And so the young child was blown away because his grandfather had never talked to him about what he had did as a juvenile for Chapel Hill Nine. And so he was blown away. So he literally, after the presentation, he was up there, "Grandpa, Grandpa, you got to tell me more about this." But he didn't know. And so and this kid, I think RJ was probably, he probably was in the 8th grade and did not know about Chapel Hill Nine. So we got to make sure, either positive or negative, we have to let people know about history. Because we start the first day of camp, we start out, each kid gets it is a front and back worksheet that has a name and an invention. And it is the title is African American Inventions. And so we don't worry too much about the name, we worry about the invention. So what we do is we start with the kids and we say, "Name that invention." They keep going until they get to the very last one on the backside. And then the next question for them is, "Name 10 things off this list that you have used before you got to camp this morning." And these kids are like, "My brush, my comb, the stoplight, you know, my refrigerator, my bed, what?" And they're like, "An African American invented that? Yeah, you better learn your history." And I said, those were the ones that were patent, that were really patent. 1600, 1700, 1800, the ones that were stolen, we have no earthly idea.
Oh, I believe it's a lot.
We have no earthly idea. I said, so yeah, we start off by talking about what we have invented. Because if you sit and you listen to society, society will tell you, y'all ain't did jack. Y'all ain't did nothing. So you better know your history. We did a book this last summer. It was called The American Story. It's the book is probably a third grade book. It's only maybe 30 pages. But I give sometimes books like this. It's more the message. It's not about the reading. It's just the message of the book. And it talks about Africa. How the slaves or Africans were sold. You know, they was sold. And got on the transatlantic ships. And so it also follows a mother when she gets here, has a baby. The baby gets taken from her. And the illustrations are done by a guy from North Carolina, Charlotte. So we read that book out loud. And after we read it, we talked about, could you have made it through the passage? You on that ship, you're out on the ocean, could have been a month, could have been 2 months. And so we talked about that, and I said, do you all realize your ancestors, that's why we're here, your ancestors were on that boat, probably 10 million, we all know, 10 million probably didn't make it. You got to think about, some of them were thrown off the boat with shackles. Some of them jumped off the boat with shackles because they felt that was going to be a better way from them. Then you had the ones that literally were forced to eat food on the boat. So I'm like, these people made it. And then had to endure slavery. I said, that's why we take that trip to Stagville, and I tell anybody, go to Stagville. First time I went to Stagville, it took me 2 days to come down because there is still a couple of the slave cabins still there. Okay. Those people had to make the bricks. Okay. I mean, the bricks weren't made. They had to make them. And there are fingerprints still there in the bricks. And you go in these cabins where it might have been 20 people that lived in there. Door in the back, door in the front, and it may be two windows. And that's where they lived. But also, I tell the kids, you got to think about it. This family owed, you know, 1,000 slaves and probably 10,000 acres of land, okay? You had families, your great, 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 great grandparents were in slavery. We're looking at probably 200 years. These people didn't go no farther than 10 miles. And there's still the main master's cabin still there. And you could see it's on a hill. So you still have things that have burnt out, but there's still foundations. So those were the people who worked in the house. But they put these houses so they can make sure you ain't going too far. You're not going too far. And then there's still a barn there. That barn is 160 years. And like I try to tell the kids, it's long, more than that, but I try to tell the kids when we go in the barn, these kids, they didn't have, the people didn't have tools. They did all this by hand to build this barn. And the way they laid it out. And like I always tell the kids, say, listen, this is for their livestock. The livestock that lived here was more powerful than where y'all lived at up there. This is where your the nice horses that were running you down, the dogs, the cows, the sheep, whatever they had. That was their livestock. They paid money for this stuff. So I'm like, y'all gotta think about this. This is real. This wasn't something that was made up. This is real. And so you've got to know your history.
What does that feel like to bring kids into that space? Because I know it must be...
It's a hard day for some of them because they've never been there. And then after we leave there, we end on a positive note. Mm-hmm. We go to a Black-owned Chick-fil-A on Hillsboro Road there in Durham. And then Miss Pamela will come out and she will talk to the kids about owning a Black business, what it takes to have a Black business. And that is the uplifting part about that day. You learn your history, it's firsthand, you're there. But then this is the now. She talks about how you can work there at Chick-fil-A. She talks about how you can get a scholarship to college there at Chick-fil-A. But just telling, hey, her and her husband have owned this Chick-fil-A for 15 years. So that's the uplifting part. You can be here.
Yeah, this agency. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, you... To present both, you have to present both in one day, like the past and the present. I think about in Chapel Hill and Carrboro as one escape, and like Carrboro, Rainbow Crosswalk, Carrboro.
Mm-hmm.
Having been like a sundown town,
mm-hmm.
less than 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it wasn't long ago because Saturdays, Blacks knew. Okay? Black folks know during my time. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, right up 54. Okay? White cross. Burned crosses on Saturday.
In your lifetime.
In my lifetime. Mm. Even in my lifetime, people don't realize over here, southern states... KKK, right behind there. Okay, in my lifetime. Okay, so it ain't all gone.
Yeah.
Even Fuquay Varina, we had a car, my cousin's car stopped in there. We were going to our family's house in Dunn, and I was probably 7 or 8 years old. Car conked out as we get into Fuquay. But our family had always told us, don't stop in Fuquay. Mm. Well, that choice we didn't have. And we were able to get off the side of the road. There was a convenience store that we knew. It was called The Farm. You looked at the farm and you knew Black folks don't know about that farm. Mm. And so it was not a great thing. Man comes out, he's got his gun. Y'all need to get off our property. We can't go anywhere. You got some water? We kind of like overheated here. What you want us to do? But it's what helped us out was a Black resident came, and he knew him. He said, "Listen, these people, I can tell you right now, I don't know them. They passing through."
Right.
And so he's like, "Well, they need to move on." And so let's see what we can do to help. Mm-hmm. And so. Got that water, and we went, and finally that sucker cranked up, and we kept getting up, and we knew, and it was so funny. By the time we get to done, we're telling the story, and so I never stopped in that town again physically until I was taking a radar class, and it was a week class. And when we did our introduction, we were talking. I was like, you know what, y'all? I got to share this. So I'm sharing the story. And I'm like, y'all, I've never, this is my second time ever stopping in this town. ever. And here I am. I was probably 33, 34. I said, I've been through, and we go through. Y'all done added stop lights and all this kind of stuff. But when we go through, we go through. We ain't stopping. I said, so I'm sitting here in a building, and I'm going to be here for 5 days. Man, I got so much emotion stuff going on right now. I don't even know. But yeah, so in our lifetime, it's still alive and well.
Yeah.
It ain't going nowhere.
How old were you in the car?
7. I was either 7 or 8.
Because
they used to have, when we used to ride through, there was a house over to the right. And you would see the white sheets on the clothesline. You know that white sheets, you know that's what they wore. Ain't nobody. Yeah, everybody knew.
They got all hung up in the front yard.
Hell yeah. People knew. People knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just moved on. You know. You knew your place. And you moved on. But yeah, Chapel Hill got it. Carver got it.
Yeah.
That's
the thing about history is it's not.
Well, I've gotten on Carver because Carver needs to talk about their history. It's more
exactly.
about it's more about Carr.
Yes.
Okay, let's be real.
Right.
Some black folks lived in Carver. For I was sitting and I learned my history and I had been here.
Mm-hmm.
Dick and Sherry Forbes. Okay, they live on Carr Street, well, which now is Braxton Fouché Street, right? So I had been in that house many, many times. And so one day, Dick had told me to come on inside. He was doing something to his chimney. And so we were talking, blah, blah, blah. He said, hey, let me show you these letters here. So I'm like, what's going on with that? He said, that's Mr. Cole. You didn't hear about Mr. Cole? No. So he's telling me the history about this house. Mr. Cole was a slave who bought his freedom, who worked on the railroad tracks, bought like 5 houses on Carr Street for his brothers and sisters. Okay, so as he's buying his freedom, he's buying other people freedom and he's buying property. And literally stealing this old chimney that's in this house. You can see where this man was trying to write his name.
Wow.
So I'm listening to Dick tell this story. I'm like, what? Where the story at?
Exactly.
He said, yeah. Some of the great, great, great grandkids come in from Chicago every summer. There's that house that they bought. And then there's another house that somebody in the family rents. And they come down. And I'm like, is this in Carborough history books? Because the one book I saw, only thing they got is a black guy. He was like a cab. And he would pull somebody over the campus. I said, got to be more history than that.
Yeah.
Got to be. What about the family, that black family used to own from where Tommy Tucker owns the car wash? From the car wash, they owned where the art center is, all the way to Wendy's. That was black owned.
Wow.
Okay. Then you know about the Strayhorn house that they just did the landmark last summer about. Okay. So why we ain't talking about this black history up in here?
Yeah. The good and the bad.
I'm just like, y'all got to do better. Y'all say y'all want oral history, gay y'all names, and you still ain't doing what you're supposed to. So, you know how it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I do. Rainbow crosswalk call. Well, wow. Wow, we've covered, like, your personal history and then what you're up to now, and then we've also gotten to talk about just like the history that you get to like learn for yourself and also pass along to young folks at camp.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm looking at time and I want to just give you the opportunity to like fill any gaps if you feel you've left any, or I don't know. You're giggling at me because this is my first time. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, this has been great.
So you want to know about other projects I have done?
Well, or just anything you want to say that you feel you're about that that matters to you. Just if I don't know, like if we don't end up getting to rope you back into another one of these, anything you don't want to leave unsaid.
Well, you know, people always say, when are you going to slow down? So I came from people who were very active, okay, are still very active. So, like, my grandmother, Martha McLendon, was one of the founders of Pine Nose Center. She worked closely with JACA, and then she worked with IFC. And that was her main passion, was getting furniture and food to people in the community. And then she had three daughters who she instilled in, you got to give back to the community. Mm-hmm. That means, you know, giving back to your church or whatever job you were doing, you had to give back. And so one aunt was a nurse for babies for 34 years. Then my other aunt worked at the hospital for 33 years. And then my mom worked for prison system for 25 years. But all of them found something in the community to do. The passion could have been volunteering for IFC, could have been doing voter.
Yes.
Voter election. I mean, I tell people, from following, being in the back seat with my grandmother. She never drove, but we would be in Pittsburgh at night because she would have a meeting, and I'm 6-7 years old sitting saying, this meeting about over, what I'm supposed to do? So you knew then. And then my mom was on boards for voting, for planning, and I'd be up like in Hillsboro, like, wow. Woo, that meeting is 12 o'clock. I'm supposed to be in bed. I got school. Wow. And so it was just always something. Because so like for church, my granny was a missionary. So I knew on Sundays, we would have certain people, we would go to their house. And it might have been, I would have to take their trash out or whatever they needed. Person was sick. You had to do that. So then, like, my mom would do voting. So I always knew when voting was coming because I would have to go to every house to give out pamphlets. Wow. So you knew at an early age, when you got 18, you ain't have a choice. You had to vote. And you knew that was going to be happening. So then as you got older, you just did things. I tell people I started tutoring my first person when I was like 8 years old. Even when I was in 10th grade at Chapia High, the teacher just had me, the kids, everybody in the math class was 12th grade. She was just like, hey, Niecy, I need you to get this group over here, blah, blah, blah. So even as I started working in the real world, I had kids that I tutored. I had a kid at Glenwood that I had her for 3 years. She went to the musical school in, what was it, in Chicago? I can't remember the college. Started with an O. Oberlin?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. She went there, got a free ride there. Then I had another kid that I did. She got a free ride at Spelman. So just helping, tutoring. And then I got in the real world. Then it was like, hey, I got bills. What? And I did a stunt for the police for 6 years. Did that. So that was community. Knowing people because I policed my community where I lived at. Then I have done a lot, probably at least 25 years with IFC. I helped with the crop walk. Help with food drives, whatever there. I also do a St. Paul Village 5K for for my church, St. Paul. This will be the 13th year of that. I also have done 4 political campaigns. I've been, I am a state treasurer for North Carolina. I got appointed to the school board bond committee. So we have one more meeting coming up with that. So I've been doing that for 2.5 months. I'm also a member of Hannah Roof, which is a youth and senior citizen group that we do projects throughout the year. I am friends of Hargrave Center, so I help with their book bag drive. We're getting ready to do Thanksgiving coming up November 23rd. What else I do? Wow.
Again.
And I do my camp. Woo. And my camp has became, it was a 3-week program. Now is we're trying to do something every other month. We just sent some kids to a college fair in Cary 2 weeks ago. We're going to have the science fair coming up November 23rd. So just trying to reach the kids, reach them, keep them engaged, and just empower them. Just let them know you can do it. You've got some people. You know, I have a lot of kids. I may go to a basketball game, football game, or like they've got an event coming up next Tuesday. And so a lot of the kids are saying, Miss McClendon, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Hey, I told y'all, you never know when you're seeing me. You don't want to see me? What's the problem? I'm here to support you. But that's, you know, just little things like that. You know, I tell them, I say, listen, send me, come January, send me those grades. You never know what E3 or send through, you know. I'll send them like a $10 gift card to somewhere, mm-hmm. You know. Just letting them know that we're thinking about them, yeah. You know. And I tell people, little things like that go a long way. They go a long way. It doesn't take, like I tell people, you don't have to have a circle of 50 people to be around you. If you get you a core of 10 people who are really invested in you and you invested in them, you don't need any more. You don't need any more. Because you all promise you, everybody's going to keep everybody on track and you're going to be doing the right thing. You know, when you get 50, it's about a show. And you know, if you're about a show, that's good. But if you really want that real core, staying on track, people who really are there for you and not afraid to tell you, that ain't what you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. That's all you need. That's all you need.
This is beautiful. Thank you. I feel inclined to, I don't feel inclined to ask when you're going to slow down.
Well, I have slowed down. And then I forgot one thing I'm doing.
right.
The NAACP, I'm the chairperson of the NAACP Education Committee. So I am getting off of that December 31st. I've done that for 2 years. We just did a movie screening and a panel discussion where 115 people attended. It's a lot. We do like 3 meetings a month with just for that. But I'll still be on the committee, but can't just do the chairperson stuff.
Wow. You take care of yourself and you do the things that empower you. I'm sure it abounds, you know. That seems like it's very much, you know, I said, is there anything else you're about? And you said, you're about being in this community and like caring for it and caring for the folks around you and the young folks. That's wonderful. Wow. This, I'll never be scared of one of these again. This is great. Well, I really enjoyed meeting you today and also getting to talk to you. And this little interview, maybe we Maybe we'll have you back. Maybe I'll get to talk to you again.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Just in life. We still have some stuff to talk about UNC, so I haven't forgotten the pin I put in. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.